Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Sometimes I imagine my cat sitting on my lap, purring. And as I put my attention on the cat that's purring on my lap, I find myself aligning to her purr, to her peace, to her surrender and acceptance of the moment. And so much of what life is about finding that place of the inner purr, that place of an abiding peace. That stillness that the Bible says passes all understanding. And we have the opportunity in every holy instant, with every breath, to return to this place of sanity. The place of insanity would be the mind that wants to strategize and awfulize and imagine. But this beautiful breath within the breath, this resting place of the divine purr. Emerson likened it to an infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose at the center of our being. He also admonished us that it is our finite self that wails and suffers. And so we have two selves. We have this finite self, this egoic presence that we discussed in our class this week, which is the place of tyranny. But we also have this eternal soul, a spiritual part of ourselves that was never born and never dies. And so we have the opportunity to return to this default mechanism within ourselves. So when life would want to spiral us out with a potential reaction, we have the opportunity to breathe into that place. And yet again, for another holy instant, to take up residence in this peace that passes all understanding. It has been given all of us through grace. It's there right now. And as the Bible says, be still, and in that know that I am God, that God is everywhere. This is not a God that's a man in the sky. This is a divine presence, a divine love that is the all that is. It is the breath within the breath. It is spirit, the one that knows no other. And when we can prioritize our attention, even Jesus said there's only two commandments: to love God, this presence, with all your heart and soul and mind, and then to love your neighbor as yourself, because it is yourself. But he prioritized it. First, go home. Go home to the source. Today I'm speaking about standing on and standing for. The one question that we need to ask ourselves is, am I standing on holy ground? Am I anchored in source with a big S? Am I standing on spirit and presence and divine love? And from that, my purpose will be revealed. What I stand for will come from what I stand on. And so today we take the question within, what am I standing on? And what am I standing for? The mind is 10 times more active in the question than it is with an answer. So I don't ask the question to find an answer. I ask the question to stay in the question. As I've been reflecting for the last few days on this idea, I realize I'm standing on truth, the truth that sets me free, so that I might speak the truth and stand for the truth around COVID-19, the truth around freedom and democracy, the truth around the environment and global warming, to stand on truth so that I might stand for some kind of action, some kind of proactive way of being in the world. I've carried in this Sunday some signs that say, if you like the shade, thank a tree. Because my beloved husband, and it's our anniversary today, we've been married 3 years, he stands on this idea that trees are sacred. And so he stands for their preservation. And so he had some signs printed up so that he might raise consciousness around the sacredness of these leafed ones who provide shade in our beautiful city. And so we get to look within and ask that existential question, what am I standing on and what am I standing for today? And then smile as we feel into what that might be in this world at this time, at this troubled time. It is a troubled time in the world. And naturally, our purpose emerges from that place, not as a desperate need to find a purpose, but as an intimate calling of the soul to say, here I am, use me. This life belongs to you. How may I serve? And in that, we are guided every breath, every step. And we say yes, 1,000 times yes. So having planted the seed of intention, of inquiry, I invite you to open your eyes, to come back into this sacred space so that I can see you smiling back at me, knowing that the eyes are the window to the soul, and I don't have a clue who a lot of you are, but I am so grateful that you've showed up here today with a willingness to investigate this incredible life that we've all been given. You know, I love it what the Buddhists say. They say, do you know how rare it is for you to be on this planet? It's as rare for a blind tortoise in the Pacific Ocean to find the one life preserver and for that blind tortoise to put its head through that life preserver. That's how rare it is to have a life on this planet. And so when you know how sacred that life is, well then could we make it our primary intention to work on this life, to celebrate this life that we've been given? Not as some just kind of casual life, but no, this is the life of the divine. You know, it was Meister Eckhart that said, when you plant a pear seed, you get a pear tree. When you plant an acorn, you get an oak tree. But when you plant a God seed, you get the God self. So we're here to plant the God seed of your being and invite this God self to arise. And that's your responsibility, that's your opportunity, and it's mine as well. So let's explore what that might look like. In this month of August, I'm working with Mark Nepo's lovely little book called The Book of Soul. And this month in particular, I'm exploring the idea, what is our walk in the world? And you know, as I said in that opening meditation, the walk in the world is how we show up for life. And there's an awful lot to show up for life. We have a pandemic. Thank you for honoring science and wearing your mask today. I guess that variant is quite amazing. And even people who've had the vaccine. You know, I was just up in Maine and the senator from Maine, Angus King, this beautiful independent, he's now really sick with the COVID and he had his shots with the variant. So you can't be flippant around this thing. You have to be mindful and careful. So what is your walk in the world during this time? We've gone back to having virtual classes. We were going to start the live classes, even the live satsang. Now we've gone back to virtual Zoom classes. And we're doing Falling into Grace by Ajahn Shanti on Wednesday mornings. And I'm going to announce that satsang will be starting in the next month, September, the first Wednesday in September. And if you're interested in doing satsang on Zoom, there's a sign-up sheet in the other room that you can put your name and your email, and we'll send you an invitation. We're going to start off the month of September by doing a generational healing. And you know, it's really quite profound because you see all these faces in the gallery and literally you can put your hand up on the screen and touch the hand of another. And I find that it's equally, and you know why? Because we're spiritual beings. We don't have to be in the same room, even though it's awfully nice to hold someone in your arms when you've been touch deprived for so long. Also, there are some signs out there for those of you who want to put a sign under a tree that say, this is for you, Trey, like shade, thank a tree. Spread the word. We need more and not less. Now, you know, this all arose because someone was developing Five Points and they were buying up the little houses in Five Points. And the first thing they would do, cut all the trees down. And then they had the chutzpah to come to our house and thank us for our beautiful garden. And then Trey, in his inimitable way, he said to him, "Sir," he said, "we are trying to have more trees in Five Points, not less trees." And then he turned to Trey and he said, "Get a life." And that ended that relationship. So I'm trying to do it in a much more proactive, loving way. And if you care about shade and trees and... So back to Mark Nepo. The first week I explored the idea of living with meaning, living with truth, and living with kindness. And meaning comes from the soul. So my beloved Anastasia is wanting purpose in her life. Your purpose comes from your soul. So what brings meaning to your life? And then the second thing is living with truth. I was talking to my prayer partner this morning, and we've been prayer partners for 22 years. He posted it on Facebook with a picture of him and myself. He said, "It's my longest relationship on the planet, a 22-year relationship, and all we do is pray together." But he was a fallen monk, if you will. He joined the Franciscan monks. He fell in love with another man, left the monastery. Then he was wandering in the dark in the wilderness until he found this teaching, became a minister of this teaching. And this morning I was sharing with him what I'm talking about. He always asked me that, and about standing on and standing for. And I said, "You know, you and I have always stood on the mystical truth. We've stood on spirit versus religion. And, you know, religion sometimes is the enemy of a spiritual teaching, because religion is ensconced in its doctrine." Now, he was a monk, and he said, the monks were the ones that kept the mystical truth alive in themselves, but the priests were the ones who gave you absolution from your sins. And I says, "Oh, really?" And I said, "Where did that start?" He said, "It started with St. Augustine in 300 AD. He said, St. Augustine was a party man, was a wild guy, but then he got converted, and he became radical about sin, sin, sin. But he said, you know, in the Catholic Church, when they hold that biscuit up, he said, all you have to say is, 'Father, forgive me for I have sinned.' You don't even have to eat the biscuit, and all your sins are removed." I said, "Really?" I said, and then we both laughed together. "Is that the kind of religion that you want? We don't even have sin in this teaching." So when you're living in truth, you don't want the pablum. Gene and I know what that's all about. You don't want someone to give you some fakakta idea that you can be absolved just by holding up a biscuit and saying, "I am forgiven." No, you want to be doing the work on yourself, living in truth, living in meaning, and the last one is living in kindness. My Zen calendar this week had a quote from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Now, mind you, he is the head of the Tibetan Buddhism whole lineage. He's a very wise man. I've heard him speak several times. And he says, "My religion isn't Buddhism, even as profound as that is." He says, "My religion is kindness." Now, what if we could reduce our doctrine to just being kind to one another? You know, it's the golden rule, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. That's in every spiritual teaching on the planet. It's not a Christian or a Jewish thing. It's a universal thing. So what if we could just be kind to one another? So that's the first inquiry, to walk in the world with meaning, truth, and kindness. Then the second week, I looked at the idea of becoming wholehearted. And this came largely because of Carl Jung. And Jan will appreciate this, because Carl Jung said you can't be whole if you haven't embraced your shadow. So it's not about being misperfect. It's about knowing that your imperfect is as equally as sacred as your perfect. There's a line in the Bible that says, "Could my own perfect adore my own imperfect?" In the Native American spirituality, they said within the tapestries and the carpets and the fabrics they would make, they would always leave a flaw so that the soul could escape. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. So your flaws are beautiful things. And when you want to be a wholehearted individual, you get to embrace the anxiety. You get to embrace the fear. You get to embrace the darkness. Because when you embrace the darkness, right in the middle of the darkness is the light. My beloved daughter, she's an empath like me, and she feels the suffering on the planet. I so relate to her. I swear to God, you were meant to come through me, but I didn't. No, you know the reasons. So, but anyway, she was feeling the sadness of what was going on in Afghanistan this week. I was not only feeling that, but I was feeling the sadness for the planet because of the heat and the drought. And I used to live in California, and Gigi knows what that's like. I feel the suffering when the trees don't get a drink of water, and when there's not water for the fish in the stream, and where are the animals going to go? I watched one of those National Geographic things about Africa, and they showed the drought in Africa and the animals that can't get water. And I felt the sadness, and I, as much as I wanted to open to that, what they call the cry of the planet, I couldn't do it because I took it personally. So yes, so could we live a wholehearted life? And by that, I mean, we get to meet our sadness. We get to, and not run away from the sadness. One of my favorite satsangs, and satsang is a powerful thing, and I hope you all will come and join us on Wednesday night. There was a woman who was drowning in grief in satsang. And she sat up there with Gangaji, and the woman had lost her husband, she'd lost her animal, and I think she lost maybe her parent. And she said, it's so deep. If I touch this grief, I don't think I'll ever come out. So she held her hand and said, I'm here for you. Chris, that's someone who's there. She holds your hand and looks at you and says, would you be willing to go in the grief? And I tell you, you'll be okay. And she started feeling the grief. And Gangaji said, breathe, because the tendency is to hold your breath. See, I did that to myself. So as she started to breathe again, there's that sacred breath. Gangaji says, what are you feeling? And she said, in the midst of that pain, I'm feeling the love that never died. And that she said, that's right. So when the grief should arise and you open to feeling that, notice how it takes you to the love. And in that holy instant, I realized that wasn't just for this woman, but that was for me. I know that every time we talk about Tess and I see your eyes a little tear up, she's still here. And she'll say to you, you're the sweetest thing on the planet, because that was her love language. And so what if Tess's still here? She's just not in form. Then we get to have this beautiful dance with the universe. My prayer partner in Canada, he's a retired minister. He has two funerals today. He says, you know, and he said they're the most sacred things to do, because when you do a funeral, you don't do it for the body that's left the planet. You do it for that soul that's still there and that's still vitally present. So yeah, so being wholehearted is such a big thing. The next thing I spoke about last week was bringing forward what it is that's yours to bring forward in the world. That's where your purpose is going to come from, Anastasia. It says in the Gospel of Thomas, the Logians, they're very disturbing. If you want to be hit by spiritual truth, read the Gospel of Thomas. And he says, if you bring forth that which is within you, this is Jesus speaking, that which is within you will save you. If you do not bring forth that which is within you will destroy you. Let those who have ears to hear hear. Dum, da-dum. That's what he said. So are we bringing forth whatever this thing is? Is it our compassion? Is it our clarity? Is it our inspiration? Is it our creativity? What is it that's to be brought forth within you? You get to ask that question. And through lowly listening, through deeply listening, there is this imprisoned something that wants to be revealed by means of you. You know, I ask Anastasia how Pepper is, because my beloved Speckles made her transition, and it wasn't a week later that Pepper's was brought over to me in my backyard, and it felt like her spirit was in Pepper, and I was just too grief-stricken to accept it, and the next thing you know, she found a new mama, and it's the perfect place for her. So did Speckles leave? Yeah, she left in form, but her spirit's still hanging around, and maybe it's in that little dog, I don't know, but I certainly feel her presence. When I see, and you know, Speckles was the hardest dog I ever had. She chewed up everything. And, you know, when the same thing happened to Anastasia, I just smiled. And I said, you know what? It's Speckle karma. And you just got it in Pepper. Yeah, so what is mine to bring forth was what we talked about last week. And then this week, carrying on with his 52 paths of living from the soul. You know, it's a pathless path. You get to find your own. He asks the existential question, what do you stand on and what do you stand for? Huh. You know, think about that. What do you stand on? And here's how he phrases it in here, and then I'm going to expound on that, and you get to live in the question. He starts by quoting Archimedes. Do you remember in eighth grade when you studied the Archimedes principle? It was the lever and the fulcrum. You have a fulcrum, and you put a thing on there, and you put something heavy, and you push down on the thing, and yeah. So Archimedes said, and God knows how many thousands of years ago, give me a place to stand, and I can move the world. And so he starts with that idea. What are you standing on? In early days of my ministry, they realized religious science didn't have a vision statement. And you know, there's the line from the Bible, without a vision, you shall fail. So we all went to Whitefish, Montana, and we took a whole group of ministers, and we went into meditation, and we asked, what is the vision of this teaching that we are a part of? At the time it was called Religious Science, now we're called Centers for Spiritual Living. And from the deep listening, I can remember that holy instant when it just popped up. When someone said, it's about The vision is to awaken all of humanity to its spiritual magnificence. That each one of us, that's the first step. We have to awaken to this divine love, to this infinite intelligence, not the local mind. When we do spiritual mind treatment, we're moving from the local mind into the non-local mind. So it's the God mind. Eckhart Tolle calls it the no mind. That no mind, that God mind, that infinite mind has an awareness and intelligence that's so much superior to your local mind, because the local mind has opinions and judgments and concepts and conclusions. And you know, the first thing you have to do on truth teachings, you have to unlearn. You have to give up your conclusions. I was raised in a fundamentalist background where my mother had the conclusion that she passed on to her children, because that's what their parents do. They transmit themselves. And her conclusions were that we were born in sin. Now, my prayer partner told me this morning on our prayer call, he says, that started with St. Augustine. He said that whole thing of original sin started with St. Augustine, and he was a crazy man. And then, of course, once you're born in sin, then you need to be washed in the blood to be, and that's how that whole thing was perpetuated. When you can see it for what it was, you have the capacity to step back. I remember the very first evening I met Raul Mejia. He showed up for one of our Wednesday night satsangs, and he starts talking about Bruce Lipton, a scientist, more like a mystic, who awoke to the realization that the subjective mind is so much more powerful than our objective mind. Now, in religious science, they say the objective mind is more powerful because it directs the subjective mind. But Bruce Lipton said, how could you take this infinite, vast, creative intelligence and say that it's inferior to your little mind that's going to change a thought? We have to work with both. And so when we begin to open to this field of awareness, this field of intelligence, and as we're learning in Ajahshanti's book, Falling into Grace, the culprit is thought. The culprit is belief. You can't afford to believe your thoughts because all thoughts arise from the egoic consciousness. I once thought this. I don't think that anymore. So you realize thought is impermanent. And then you give yourself to reality. Now, Raul and I have these wonderful conversations because he said, what is real? I'm sitting here holding my wife's hand. Are you telling me she's not real? I'm saying, and he said, what is reality, David? Great question. And I said, Raul, there's a reality with a capital R and there's a reality with a little r. The little reality is David Leonard sitting here. The bigger reality is this is divine love facing divine love. And all there is divine love. And then I went on to say to him, the bigger reality was never born and never dies, and the bigger reality doesn't come and go. What comes and goes is the little r. Friends come and go. Relationships come and go. Houses come and go. Cars come and go. Pets come and go. But the love doesn't go anywhere. And so you're asked to see things in a greater way. So here's Mark Nepo on standing on and standing for. He says there are two perennial questions that we need to ask in order to find each other and also to find our way in the world. These two questions are, what am I standing on and what am I standing for? And here's how he elucidated that. He said, standing on refers us back to a timeless foundation, to some sense of source with a big S, to all that is larger than us, from which we're renewed as an integral being. When Anastasia came to our revealing service, she talked about divine love. It's all about the love, the love, the love, love. She's standing in the love, not in the consequences, not in the transitions, standing on the love. That's the bigger something. And then standing for, it leads us into the heart of what we value the most and the ethics by which we live in the world. You know, you could say that Trey's obsession with trees is kind of an obsession, but I think it's his ethics, because he regards all life as sacred. When Gigi and I traveled with him to Istanbul and throughout Turkey, he was angry because all these spiritual people couldn't see that the animals on the side of the road were thirsty. They'd be, and he'd say, all you spiritual people think about is God. And he'd go and take the water bowl and he'd be feeding the animals, because that's who he is. When we were staying in Gunnersville, one of the trees was just drooping down by Lake Gunnersville. So he called the parks department. He says, you have a tree that really desperately needs water. We used to carry buckets of water to the tree. And so what did they do? They brought one of the men around and they cut the tree down. So I said, you had to say something, didn't you? You had to say something. He's standing for leads us into the heart of what we value and the ethics in which we live in our world. So standing on gives us the compass. And standing four gives us the direction to stay true to the following of that compass. These two perennial questions need to be asked of ourselves and of everyone that we meet, and they are the basis of an honest relationship. So you're going to have a relationship with somebody. What do you stand on? You know, are you, a friend of mine just started a relationship, and I said, are you spiritually yoked? And she kind of sat back. Because if you're not, I can't see how you could sustain a relationship unless you resonate in that same vibrational field. I know it's true for me to be spiritually yoked. But lastly, because a little tiny bit more of this. For me, that chance was my journey through cancer. Oh, this is how he found what he stands on and stands for. It changed my stance in the world. He had cancer twice, nearly died, came back, and it changed the whole perspective. So what if life gives you cancer? It's not a bad thing. It's a transformational thing. It's a way for you to reconfigure. Some of you know what I'm talking about. So it made me a student of applied spirituality, and it led me to what I stand on now and to what I stand for. He preached a gospel that's not based on any religious garbage. He's a nice Jewish boy. He doesn't speak Jewish stuff. He talks truth stuff. This is what I've learned through experience. And he goes on to say, great love and great suffering will come to all of us, but to remind us how rare it is to be here at all. And he said, then it's our job to stay awake and our job to stay aware. It's our job to stay kind. It's our job to stay loving. There's a purpose for you, Anastasia. Awake, aware, kind, and loving. And you do that in spades. Ultimately, we're challenged to find something lasting to stand on and then something noble to stand for. And then you live in that question. Don't you love the simplicity of truth? I started making little lists of what I stand for and stand on. And what did I come up with here? I like to stand on truth so that I can stand for honesty. I'd like to stand on love so that I can stand for compassion and kindness and nurturing. Both Trey and I love to nurture the garden. It gives us so much gratitude. I love to nurture Napoleon the fish and to love birdseed out for the birds. Trey puts a water bowl out on the sidewalk for all the dogs that pass. And the people thank me and the dogs look at us. Well, you know, it's kind of dry and hot out there and the water bowl is kind of a nice thing to have. It was Bert's water bowl. Stand on peace. And then you bring harmony. Have you ever been to a family reunion? And there's all the turmoil that seems to come up. It happens at almost at every family reunion, the unhealed stuff. But if you bring in this consciousness of peace, well, then you could stir the seeds of harmony at the family reunion. It's a whole different way. I have a little painting back there that says, get off the battlefield. If you've ever been in a divorce, that could be a rancorous thing. Or you could be bringing in the peace to that. And then we could find something where we could mutually agree. This young man was in one of our satsangs, and he was sharing about how his mother and father were getting a divorce, and it was very contentious. And my beloved Lisa Ferraro, she has a degree in psychology. She said, imagine that there's a bridge, and that they're meeting on this bridge for the mutual benefit of both. It's the bridge where it's a win-win. It's a win for her, and it's a win for him. Can you find that place for your mom and for your dad? And just in a holy instant, he entered into that curiosity. Could I stand on the bridge of peace and have mom and dad there? It's just change. It's just transition. Mom is going her way. Dad is going his. And I'm the child in the middle. Could I stand on reality? And then I'm good with impermanence. It was Ajahn Shanti that says, yay for impermanence. Because without impermanence, nothing would ever change. So could we embrace impermanence? Could we embrace the idea that we're all connected, that there's only one life here? And could we embrace the idea that it's about staying attentive, staying awake? You know, being fully present when grace shows her face, because there are no accidents. It's divine order that brought you here, and it's divine order that will keep you here and sustain you. But if divine order moves you somewhere else, that's fine, because divine order is in charge. Lastly, I said I stand on emptiness. I stand on awake awareness. I stand on the mystery. I stand on the Tao. I stand on the Christ consciousness. You know, Christ, it wasn't Mary and Jesus or Mary and Joseph Christ. That's not what their name was. Christ was his presence. So when the Christians came here on the pilgrimage and they were sharing that you have to have Jesus as your personal savior, and I raised my hand and I'm sitting right over there, I said, is it enough to know that Christ lives within all of us? No, it is not enough. If you don't have Jesus as your personal savior, I went, holy cow. I said, I'm a Muslim, but I'm not a Christian. Because the Muslim said, all you have to do is surrender to God and you're a Muslim. So you begin to see the patterns on the energy. My friend Chris said, once you see the patterns, then you get to choose what path you will follow. So I was thinking about standing on and standing forward. Who are some of the great inspirations in my life? And one of the greatest was John O'Donohue. He was a monk who said there was too much sin in the Catholic Church, who then started going back to his Celtic roots. And in the Celtic tradition, they teach about oneness. And he wrote this incredible book called The Anamkara. And I recommend, when I have a couple that wants to get married, that they read this book before they get on with their marriage. Because this is what you want. Ophelia is your Anamkara, Anastasia. This is the soul friend. Anamkara means the soul friend. And he basically says the Anamkara is everywhere. The soul friend for Trey would be the tree. Maybe for me it's the penguin down here. The soul friend is everywhere. The soul friend just wants to enhance and love and celebrate you and expand you. So this is what he stands for. And let me just give you a little taste of him. He said, if we become addicted to the external, our interiority will haunt us. And we will become hungry with a hunger no image, no person or deed can fill. But to be wholesome, we must remain truthful to our own vulnerable complexity. So first he says, find the Anamkara within yourself, and then you'll find the Anamkara out there. Open to your complexity. He said, you are the one and only threshold to this inner world. And this wholesomeness is holiness itself. And to be holy is to be natural, to befriend the world that comes into balance in you. And the human presence is a creative and turbulent sacrament. It's visible signs of the invisible grace. So he says, our challenge is to glimpse the presence and the power of our inner and our outer friendship. We were talking about loving yourself in our revealing service. You have to love this self within the self, and then you love the self that you see everywhere as your own self. It starts within, and then it goes without. So he's standing on this organic truth, and he's passionate about. Every little line in this book has been underlined and circled and asterisked because he's speaking from that place that he stands on and stands for. He talks about that ache in the heart is this yearning of the divine within you to experience itself. Could you embrace that yearning? And then you'll meet some crazy people that are similar to you, and we meet in that yearning, and we realize that it's God's yearning for itself. And so it's so nice to see it reflected in seeming other. You know you're not all alone in the world. He goes on to say, as an artist, the human person is permanently active in this revelation. The imagination is the great friend of the unknown. Endlessly, it invokes and releases the power of possibility. And friendship then is not to be reduced to an exclusive or sentimental relationship. It's far more extensive and intensive. It's everywhere. The Anamkara is in everything. And that lastly, he goes on to say, the Celtic mind, which is what he's standing on, was not burdened by any dualism. That would be good and evil, darkness and light, right and wrong. Not the Celtic mind. It did not separate what belongs together. In the Celtic imagination, they articulate the inner friendship that embraces nature, that embraces divinity, that embraces the underworld and the human world as one world. Now, Dr. Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind said, one, one, one. If we teach anything, we teach oneness. So could we stand on an idea of oneness? And then in oneness, all is embraced, especially the shadow part, because we tend to exile the shadow. So he's saying, lastly, this Anamkara is in everything. The dualism that separates the visible from the invisible, time from eternity, and the human from the divine was totally alien to the Celts. They didn't have dualism. He has a poem in here. I was going to read you the poem, and it's the oldest known Celtic poem. And it says, I am the waves on the ocean. I am the wild boar in the forest. I am the birds that sing in the trees. I am everything and I am nothing. I am everywhere and I am nowhere. And he says, this is the most ancient Celtic poem, and it's standing on the idea that there's only one life. Now, that appeals to me as a 33-year minister who recognizes that if there's only one, could I really open to that one and experience it intimately and not get caught up in a licensing organization? My prayer partner once said to the home office, they talked about not sending tithes to them, and he says, I don't send tithes to a licensing organization. He said, I send tithes to things that open my soul up. So could we see ourselves as more than a licensing organization? Could we see ourselves as a cauldron where we get to burn in the fire of divine love and realize that there is no other, there's just that divine love? This is a big order. I remember Dorothy Edwards, Judy's mom, got kind of crazy when I started speaking this language, because it wasn't that hardcore religious science, change your thinking, change your life, you can manifest X, Y, and Z. No, it's all about surrendering to this something that we all are, and to hear the cry of the world. So the other one that I'm totally enamored of is my teacher, Llewellyn von Lee, who evolved through the spiritual tradition of Sufism to a place where he's not really teaching Sufism anymore. He's an advocate for spiritual ecology, for the soul of our planet. And whereas this is the anima mundi, which is the soul friend, he talks about the animus munda, which is the soul of the world. And he says the soul of the world needs our attention. Terry Girl feels the pain of the planet. And when I read this, it's very painful for me to read, because he talks about how the planet, and even Thich Nhat Hanh wrote one of the beautiful essays called The Bells of Mindfulness. He says the bells of mindfulness are being rung by the forests that are burning down, by the species that are going extinct, by the climate change that is cooking. And if we as a species don't hear the bell of mindfulness of the planet, we are doomed. The next great mass extinction could be in our lifetime. And so as painful as it is, he says, how can we hear the cry of the world? And how can we remedy it? And this is for you, Terry Girl, because this is very helpful to me. At the very end of this disturbing book, he gives us something that we can do, that we can stand for. And he says, we need to relearn the wisdom of listening to life, feeling its heartbeat, and sensing its soul. But first, there is a pressing need to reconnect matter and spirit. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. They're not separate. And all of life is sacred. Every breath and every stone is sacred. This is one of the great secrets of oneness. Everything is included. Within our heart and soul, we can reconnect with our primal knowing that the divine is present in everything. Now just step back and recognize that everything is the divine. Wheresoever I look, I see the face of God. What that does is that gets rid of God as some elusive something that's outside of yourself and makes it extremely intimate, extremely intimate. Wow, have a relationship with that. And so how do we do that? He does it in a very sweet, intimate way. He says, there is, for example, a simple prayer for our earth, the act of placing the world as a living being within your heart. And when we inwardly remember the divine, we become aware in our heart the sorrow and the suffering of our planet. And we ask that divine love and that healing energy flow where it's needed, into Afghanistan, into California, into the drought-ridden areas. And through our prayers and the power of the divine, it will help us, and it will help the world at the same time, help to bring the earth back into balance. We need to reawaken to this power of love and bring it into the world. Wow. Awaken to the power of love and bring it into the world. That's a big order. It's a big responsibility. You're up to it, Chris? Can you bring it into the world? He yes said yes. So here's lastly, he says, when we hear the morning chorus of birds, we may sense a deeper joy of life and awaken to the divine nature. At nighttime, the stars can remind us that we live in an infinite and eternal galaxy that's within us and it's also all around us. Watching the simple wonder of dawn or sunset can lead us into an offering that this is a sacred moment. Whatever the way, we are drawn into a sense of wonder, to recognize that it's all sacred. What matters is always the attitude that we bring to this intimate exchange. It is through the heart that the real connection is made. And when this connection comes alive, there's a living stream that flows from heart to heart as it embraces all of life. And then every step, every touch will be a prayer for the earth, and a remembrance that it's all sacred. Every touch, every prayer will be sacred. Huh. Isn't that wonderful to know? It's not a complicated thing. It's how you pet your cat. It's how you greet your friend. It's how you drive your car. You know, I read one of my very first books when my ministry just started was called Zen Driving. And it said, if you can't move into the Zen place behind the wheel of the car, how can you? So you get in the car and you move into that present moment and you take a breath and you look around you and you put your seatbelt on. I am ready And then you turn the car on. In the old days, you turn the key. Now you push the button and the car is ready. And you look around you and you move. And you turn off all the extraneous noise because you're in the Zen moment. And so I'm going to invite my beloved Chris to ring the bell of mindfulness. Allow the bell to bring you into that place of stillness. And hear how deep and soft and resonant that bell is. It's saying, go home, my beloved. Go to the other shore. The shore where there's no you and me, the shore where there's just the one life, smiling, and you are that one life. And so we stand on holy ground, as it says in the Bible. Moses, right where you stand is holy ground. And as we recognize that everything is holy, well, then it changes us. It changes our perception. If everything is holy, well, then even other, seemingly other, is holy. The pain that we want to get rid of is holy pain. The perceived suffering that we've been going through was maybe a course correction, and it too is holy because it helps us move from the shore of attachment and judgment and conclusions to the shore of freedom and acceptance and love. And so if everything is holy now, then when the darkness should come up, when the confusion should arise, instead of turning away from it, we open to it and we invite it in. We listen deeply. And ultimately we say, thank you for sharing. And once that frightened inner part of ourselves is heard and embraced, it just rests because it's no longer demanding our attention. It knows that it is seen, it is heard, it is loved. And so we stand on holy ground, and we stand for. We stand for, and you fill in the blank. For me, I stand for a deep intimacy with everything. Intimacy is into me see. I stand for intimacy. And so I can look at the tree and I can feel its soul, how it's rooted in the earth and how it reached towards the sky. Sometimes the tree is compromised. You know, we have one that's by the back door that's literally growing through the asphalt in the parking lot. It's a sycamore tree. And she's reaching up toward the sky and she's providing shade for the east side of the church. And I say hello to her every time I come in, that I see you, that I honor you, I respect you. You are an aspect of myself. And I see the beloved in this little tree, seemingly a nuisance. I'm sure that most people would say she's not an asset, but in my heart, she's a hero. Because she has chosen to grow through uncompromising circumstances and to offer her gift of shade to this beautiful center that provides nurturing for all of us. And so resting in that question, next week we will follow up by exploring our walk in the world, not with an idea that David's going to share how you need to walk, but something within is going to guide us all to take that next step into that uncertain place where we know we are to bring our beingness to the world, and our doingness will unfold from that source that we stand on. So place your hand over your heart, if you would, and we're going to join together in the heart salutation as we speak to the beloved within and all around, saying, I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you. You are the deepest aspect of the self. The beloved within me bows to the beloved within you. In this spacious awareness, there is only one. and we are that one. Revealed, expressed, and celebrated. So open your eyes, open your heart, open your hands, let your light shine. Thanks for coming. If you want to sign, they're in the other room. If you want to sign up for satsang, there's a sign-up sheet. It's a collection basket in the back of the room. Thanks for sharing, sending your tithes in, everybody. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.